Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Some people have just got it, that magic combination of good genes and more that keeps them youthful and strong well into old age. Take Olga Kotelko. When her kids grew up and she'd retired, she started working out. Today at 91, she's an international track and field star. Scientists are studying her and digging deep into muscles and DNA to figure out how to make old age a healthy, vigorous time of life. And they're making progress. This hour on Point, a chat with track star, 91-year-old Olga Kotelko, and two top researchers on the science of aging well. You can join the conversation. Have you seen the headlines on turning back the clock with chromosome tricks? Are you waiting for a magic pill? Are you out there exercising? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Let us know your city and state when you comment online. In a few minutes, we will speak with Olga Kotelko. You've got to see her fling the hammer, throw the javelin. There's a link to the video at our website. But first, joining me in the studio is Dr. Ronald DePinho from Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. He led a study in which researchers succeeded in reversing aging in mice, a big one just published in the journal Nature. You may have seen it in the headlines this week. Dr. DePinho, thank you very much for being with us.
It's great to be here.
Also joining us from the top of Silver Star Mountain in British Columbia, where he's on his own anti-aging exercise regimen, maybe, is Dr. Mark Tonopolsky. He, too, has done extensive research into exercise and aging healthfully. He heads the Neuromuscular and Neurometabolic Clinic at McMaster University in Hamilton, Ontario. Mark Tonopolsky, thank you very much for joining us today.
Great to be here as well.
Great to have both of you. Boy, on top of a mountain and right here in the studio, we've got the whole range. Ron DePinho, let me come to you first. Your research this week got everybody's attention. These incredible images of mice who looked ancient and creaky, and then you're in there into their chromosomes and working on them, and suddenly they're looking buff and young again, and we see the images of their brains even taking on much greater youthful dimensions again. What have you been doing, and when can you do it for we humans?
Well, the research does teach us something very fundamental about the aging process. Aged tissues, even ones that are in a fairly degenerate state, retain the remarkable capacity to rejuvenate. What we did in this study was to engineer mice with excessive amounts of DNA damage. DNA damage turns out to be a major cause of aging.
So you sort of age them intentionally in the lab.
Yeah, so what we did was to manipulate a very important enzyme, telomerase, for which the Nobel Prize was given out last year. This enzyme helps to maintain the ends of your chromosomes, the very tips of the DNA at your chromosomes. It turns out that as we age, we accumulate damage at those tips, and these telomeres could essentially erase and restore that damage. So what we did in this particular study was to engineer these mice with a telomerase gene, a repair gene that we could turn on and off artificially. We, in the off state, these mice experienced many signs and symptoms of aging, the smaller brains, impaired cognition, infertility, gray hair.
And when you turned them back on, what happened?
Turned it back on. Frankly, we were expecting perhaps a slowing or stabilization of the aging process. And instead, we witnessed a dramatic reversal in the signs and symptoms of aging, including the fact that their brains increased in size, their stem cells in their brains also were restored, newborn neurons were created.
Glossy fur again. They look fantastic.
Healthy sheen to their fur. Their fertility was restored. So this was a remarkable change, and it teaches us this fundamental point of reversibility in the aging process.
At what age in humans do these enzymes tend to go into the off position, you know, starting that aging process we're familiar with?
Well, they do. They are active during embryogenesis. They remain active in our germ cells, for example, sperm. But it gets significantly downregulated in our adult tissues. So there is some activity for this gene, but it's insufficient to quell this damage that occurs at the telomeres and maintain the telomeres.
So could you hypothetically in human beings of I don't know what age begin to reintroduce this enzyme and have all this sort of, you know, buff growth chromosome activity back, repair the tips of those chromosomes and be young again, in effect?
First, the question of the relevance of telomeres in aging is an important one. So we've learned, in fact, that the amount of telomeres that you have, the degree of damage, is correlated with years of healthy living beyond the age of 60. So what we see in individuals with the most amount of damage, per se, is that they have a higher incidence of cancer, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, Alzheimer's. So one could anticipate that if you did have a way of turning this gene on, and we're thinking about various strategies along those lines, one could at least restore the years of healthy living in this process. But it is important to emphasize that there are many factors that conspire to diminish the health of our cells as we age.
Are we born with a destiny here on our chromosome tips? Are we born with tips that are more vulnerable, likely to wear down and then lead to the kind of problems you've described? Is it, or is it lifestyle? Does it depend on how you live, how long those are going to be good,
strong? I think it's both. I think there are different capacities that we have with respect to the amount of DNA repair that we have intrinsically within us. But there is no question that there's a strong overlay of environmental or behavioral factors that can significantly influence the integrity of our genomes, of our DNA.
I want to take this to Mark Tarnopolsky, but first, can you imagine a time where we walk into a drugstore and they flip on our telomere action and suddenly we go from looking 80 to looking and feeling, 40, 50, something much younger?
There's it's an extraordinarily challenging issue or problem to be able to specifically control the activity of a single gene surgically, precisely, and precisely in the way that you'd want to, which we still don't understand. This study is really the first, and we need to do a lot more in terms of understanding when you would want to turn it on, how long would you want to turn it on, at what age should you turn it on, and in what circumstances. And there are many points that we can go into in the course of our conversation here, but it is a very significant scientific challenge to really manipulate genes in a very, very specific way. But it is something that we're working hard on.
You can imagine a lot of people signing up for that in a hurry. I mean, you just look at the pictures of mice. Wait till we see, if we see, humans undergoing that same kind of transformation, how people would be banging on your door. Mark Tarnopolsky, what are you thinking as you listen to this talk about chromosomes and aging? You're really focused on exercise. Do these two intersect, Mark, or are they two different streams when it comes to staying vigorous into high numbers?
No, I think the two are definitely related. As was pointed out, there are multiple factors that are involved in the aging process. In addition to telomere shortening, there is the process of what's called mitochondrial dysfunction. And the mitochondria are essentially the powerhouse of many of our cells. And interestingly, there is a relationship between mitochondrial dysfunction and telomerase activity. And interestingly, they've actually found that TERT, which is the main enzyme involved in the telomerase activity, is actually found in mitochondria. So in a way in which the telomerase may be involved in helping to repair the shortening of the distal ends of the chromosome, there is evidence that it may actually have a role in maintenance of a piece of DNA which is inside our mitochondria.
Does that mean if I get down to the gym every day, I can help my chromosome stay in top shape too, not just my, glutes?
Well, there's no question that mitochondrial dysfunction is associated with aging, much the way in which we have a shortening of the telomeres. And the relationship between the two is now just being explored. But we do know that with exercise, we can increase our mitochondrial activity. And recent evidence that we have also shows that in the stem cell, which is where the telomerase is still active, at least when it gets turned on, the stem cells in older adults can be activated by exercise, even in sedentary people over the age of 65, and bring in relatively new mitochondria and mitochondrial DNA. And we're now trying to explore, based on this very exciting new research, whether also the telomerase is involved in that activation of these quiescent or almost asleep stem cells that we have in our muscle, which are reactivated even in older adults in the presence of physical activity.
Mark, we're going to talk in just a couple of minutes with your fellow Canadian, Olga Kotelko, quite astonishing 91-year-old who's out there throwing the hammer and the shot put and the javelin. I mean, what have you seen in people of high years who have this sort of extraordinary vigor? Is that sort of baked in the cake? Is that lifestyle or genes?
Well, I think there's no question, as was already pointed out, that there is an interaction between the genes that we have and our lifestyle. Now, unfortunately, at this point, we can't change our genes or select our parents, so we're kind of stuck with what we have. But we do know that irrespective of the genes that we have, we still can start exercise in our younger age, midlife, and even over the age of 65, and reverse some of the damage that has occurred through something that's applicable now, and that is physical activity. And that works both for endurance and resistance exercise. But along those lines, we also have individuals who are at that intersection where they're endowed with great genes, which is almost certainly the case for Olga, plus lifelong physical activity. And it just shows that we're, you know, breaking the boundaries. I mean, who would have thought that people would be throwing javelins and running at the rate that Olga is over the age of 60, much less over the age of 90.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the latest anti-aging science, from exercise to genetics. Dr. Ronald DePino is with me in the studio from the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. You may have seen the headlines out this week and the images of the remarkable work they've done with chromosomes and mice, going from aged to very vigorous looking with some scientific intervention. Also with us, Dr. Mark Tarnopolsky, professor of pediatrics at McMaster University in Hamilton, Ontario. He's done a lot of work on exercise and aging. We'll hear more about that. But joining us right now, and we're so happy to have her with us, from her home in West Vancouver, Canada, is Olga Kotelko. She is a 91-year-old international medal-winning track and field star in the Master competition, official games for senior athletes. She holds the world indoor shot put record for women 90 and over. She holds two world records in javelin for women over 85. She races, does the long jump. She's been the subject of extensive research by scientists at McGill University in Montreal, trying to figure out how she can continue to perform at a level of far younger athletes. Olga Kotelko in West Vancouver, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here.
It's just terrific to have you. Would you please share with us, Olga, tell us what your favorite events are and what you're able to do in those events at age 91?
My favorite event, especially in throwing, is hammer throw. And I like the freedom of swinging the hammer over my head and letting it go.
And how far do you throw the hammer these days?
17.11 meters.
17-plus meters. I've seen the video of you throwing this hammer. I mean, you're 91. How much does it weigh?
2 kilos.
And it is way up over your head at the end of that. I guess it's a chain.
Yeah, a long wire.
Kind of a cable, anyway. And you are whirling that thing like a youngster. I mean, did you do that when you were young, Olga?
Those things were not around when I was young, because we didn't have any kind of sports at all, except maybe a ball and a bat, and that's what we did when I was young. And I didn't pick this up when I retired from teaching.
So I understand it. Maybe when you were 70-plus, you really got into this. We'll look at that. What other events do you like, and what do you do in them?
Oh, I like running. I like jumping. And as you probably know, no 90-year-old has ever jumped. And I do high jump, long jump, and triple jump.
And you,
And you do the 100-meter dash, I understand.
Yes, I do.
What's your best time since you've been in your 90s?
Well, my world record is 23.95.
23.95 seconds. Now, the world record is just under 10 seconds, so you're 90-plus. You're still cooking along at a pretty good rate there. Can you do that any day of the week, or does that take a lot of training for you now?
Well, it takes training, of course, because you have to keep up your stamina. So you have to do training constantly, and that's what I do. I do all kinds of things, like I work in the garden, I go to the Aquafit class, but I don't go training when it's raining. So I do things, other things, different times.
Javelin, something we also associate with, you know, young athletes, statues of Greek gods. You're doing it at 91. How far do you throw?
13.54.
And is that a tough one? I mean, you've really got to get some leverage on your arm to throw the javelin. This is something many 90-year-olds wouldn't dream of.
Oh, yes. It's a great feeling when you're doing it. And it's not heavy and it's not hard. I just love doing it. You have to have a good technique.
Do you hang out with other older athletes, or are you, you know, are your friends 90-year-olds who, I don't know, with walkers and canes who look at you and wonder if you're from Mars?
Well, yes, I see that around in the community, but when you're out at a competition, they're all more or less the same. Don't see any canes.
But at a competition, these are other older athletes like yourself.
Right. Yes.
How do you feel about what you're able to do at 91 years old? Do you feel that this was inherited capacity or something that you made possible through your own effort, Olga?
I believe it's genes that matter. And, of course, a lot of training and being active all the time really, really helps.
Your activity wasn't just everyday gardening, though. I mean, you had a pretty tough Hungarian training coach who really put you through the rigorous kind of training that top athletes get, I guess.
Well, you have to be passionate about it, because that's what I am, and you have to discipline yourself so that you can always perform to your utmost, and that's what happens. You just let it go, and it goes.
Olga Kotelka, we're so glad to have you with us today. We've got callers calling in for you and a couple of top researchers listening in with us. Let me go first to Mark Tarnopolsky, your fellow Canadian there. Mark, when you think in particular of Olga's accomplishments at 90, 91, what do you see going on here in her personal case?
Well, I think Olga brings up a very good point, which is something that we use for all seniors when we're doing a training program, and that's to mix it up. Olga's not doing the same thing day after day, and our research clearly shows that if you mix in what's called aerobic or endurance-type activity with more strength-type activity, the two in combination are probably what allows people to continue to train and to get the maximal benefits as we get older. And generally, if I see people overdo it and do too much of one particular type of sporting activity, you compromise the other. For example, if you just run all the time, even into older age, when they tested orienteers and cross-country skiers who were former top sport world champions, their strength was no better than sedentary individuals. So I think it's critically important to maintain optimal health when we get older, to mix it up. And Olga, you know, clearly has just described that sort of a training regimen.
And Dr. DePino, here's 91-year-old Olga running a 100-meter sprint in 23 seconds. Now, she won't take a world record at the regular Olympics, but that's quite incredible. I mean, we all know people in their 50s who don't even run anymore at all, and she's doing this sprint in her 90s. When you look at that, do you see chromosomes at work? Do you see training at work? With your own research in mind, what do you make of this?
There's no question that it's both. Olga, very impressive. It's just wonderful to see you set such a phenomenal example for all of us. I think Olga touched on this, in fact, that she likely has very good genes. I would imagine that through her family, her heritage, that her family had fewer age-related disorders and diseases. And also she's teaching us that you have to keep the motor running. There's a lot of knowledge that we have in terms of how diet and exercise impact on things called free radicals. These are DNA damaging agents that will impact on the mitochondria, impact on the telomeres, wreak havoc in the cell, and diminish the health and well-being of the cell and ultimately the person. And so there's this very important control that we have over our health that is beyond our genes that Olga is teaching us, that you need to be active, you need to eat properly, and these are important lessons for all.
Olga, I'm reading here Canadian doctors who have examined you closely and looked back on your medical history, calling you bulletproof, by which I guess he means you've had a lifetime of very few medical problems. Does that run in your family? Do you chalk that up to, you know, just the way it goes in your clan?
I think so, because we lived on the farm, and we had all the food that we had was organic, because there were no pesticides and insecticides and stuff like that. So, and of course, on the farm, there were 11 of us in the family, 11 children, and I'm the seventh of 11, and we always had all kinds of work to do and all chores, and not only that, we walked 2 miles to school, and I believe that this has sort of stayed with me and up until now. And of course, I have developed a little stretch exercise for myself that I do every second day for an hour and a half each time. It's static exercise, not ballistic, because I hold each pose for 30 seconds. And I kind of discipline myself to be true to myself. What I do, I mean that it's going to be good for me. It's a simple routine, and it provides immeasurable benefits.
Well, the outcome is pretty
like
incredible.
Balance,
yes.
You know, we need balance, especially when we get older. Yes.
We've got a lot of callers for you. Let me begin to bring them in. Bristol, Rhode Island, Mildred. Hi, Mildred. Thank you very much for calling.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm 80 now, and when I was 51, I thought I was doing pretty well running a marathon. We ran the Falmouth Road Race, and we saw Ruth Rothbard from Boston, who was 80, and she looked like a little elf in an old lady suit. She was so bright and lively, and I thought, oh my God, she's so old, you know, now I'm that age, and but I'm still exercising, running, and take no medications, and as healthy as I have ever been. And my husband is 91. He ran until he was in his late 80s. He has Alzheimer's now, but he's his family, none of the men ever lived beyond 65, and he's 91, and my parents had heart disease for like 20 years and died in their 70s. And I honestly believe that it's not our genes. I think it's our lifestyle that made all the difference.
And how is your exercise keeping up now that you're 80, Mildred?
Oh, I just, I think the secret is you don't say, well, I'm too old to do that. You say, I can still do that, so I'm going to do it. You know, I can still lift that heavy load, so I can lift it. So I do it, and I'm very, very strong, and I just exercise. You know, I'm nothing like your guest, but I don't stop, and I don't say, well, you know, I'm going to let go and be old. So I'm not. And I think it's a matter of you say, I can, as long as I can do that, I will continue, and so you do.
I'll take, Mildred, I appreciate your call very much, and good luck to you keeping that going. We'll take it to Olga, but I want to go to Dr. DePino first. I mean, we've got a web comment online saying, you know, a 90-something marathon runner or top athlete is a nice story, but certainly must be called a statistical outlier. He says, you know, we need to think of the average 91-year-old may not be able to drive, take care of their home, have family and friends to rely on, you know, maybe broke or, you know, lots of sort of things intervene, and there's more there, but What about this? Again, we've got Mildred who says, I've got a bad family history, but through determination and exercise, she's staying healthy. Here's Olga at 91. I think a lot of people may be listening and wondering, well, is it worth it, you know, to sort of really get up and go after this? Or do I have some destiny that's in my chromosomes already that I can't get around, doctor?
There's no question that genetics does play an important role in, let's say, setting the range in which one could exist in a healthy way. But also, medical advances have made an enormous impact, and we're going to be seeing more and more of this. It was only 100 years ago that the average life expectancy was in the mid-40s, mm-hmm. and today it's north of 70.
Mm-hmm.
And so these changing demographics are obviously going to impact on things quite significantly in the century ahead. And it's something that we're going to have to deal with in a very proactive way. But part of that is to really control the sorts of things that you do in terms of diet and exercise.
Dr. Tarnopolsky, Olga got really busy on exercise when she was 70 or so. I mean, is there a point at which you turn to people and say it's too late for you? If you really want to have vigor or, maybe a longer life, does it have to be a lifelong exercise regimen or not?
No, I think that brings up a very good point. We've definitely seen that individuals who are over the age of 65 definitely can show improvements in strength. And along with that, we see reductions in oxidative stress, which is these free radicals, which can damage DNA, protein, and lipids. And that actually goes down following a period of training. And we've done two studies, one with 4 months of weight training 3 times per week, and one with 6 months of weight training 2 times per week in older adults. And we showed improvements in their strength, in their ability to get up from a chair, to climb stairs, and all of those sort of functional tasks which decrease morbidity and keep people out of a nursing home. But at the cellular level, there was less mitochondrial DNA damage, there was less production of free radicals, and in average, when we looked at a thing called a gene array that looked at all of the genes that were expressed, we reversed about a third of those genes back towards a more youthful profile. And with a bit of hand-waving and some calculations on the back of the envelope, we estimated that the muscle improved by about 20 years. So that does show clearly that we're not a slave to our destiny and we can derive benefits.
Ms. Gatelko, I have a question for you here online from Dorian. He says, Tom, please ask Olga how old she feels. And he says, I'm 50, but I feel 28. How about it? You're 91. How old? I don't know how to answer that exactly, Olga, but how old do you feel?
I don't know how one should feel when one is 91. I just feel the way I do, and I've always felt like this. I don't think I've changed. Maybe a little bit slower in some of things, but I still have good balance, and I'm just doing my thing. And I think it's never too late to achieve optimum health.
You must know plenty of people, friends, peers, relatives who are, 70 plus, 80, even 90, who are not in good shape at all, who are even, dead. I mean, what do you say to those living and older who are not in anything like your level of fitness? Is it really open to them? How do they look at you?
I am open to them, but I can only show them what I do. I cannot tell them to do it. They have to want to do it. And if you take care of yourself, 60, 70, 80, 90 is nothing for women these days.
And what's your motivation, Olga? What motivates you to get out and do all these exercises? What keeps you going?
I enjoy doing it. It gives me great strength for my body and spirit, and I feel good. I have energy. And as Justin Bieber said, it feels amazing. He says, I can't believe I'm in this position. I don't know what to say, said Justin Bieber.
That's pretty great.
And I want to thank everybody who has made me feel this way.
When's your next competition, Olga?
My next competition will be in March in Kamloops.
Where is that?
Kamloops is as well in BC.
Okay.
In the interior, it has a field house.
And you'll be out on the track in your spandex.
Of course.
It's just great. Olga Kotelko, we wish you a long and vigorous life. You've got one already. We hope it's a lot longer. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you very much. This is Tom.
Yes.
And I love you. And I understand you're good looking and rich.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Olga. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the latest anti-aging science, from exercise to genetics. We've been joined from the top of Silver Star Mountain in British Columbia by Dr. Mark Tarnopolsky. He's at McMaster University in Hamilton, Ontario. He's done a lot of work into the aging process and how exercise can be involved with to great effect. Also with me in the studio, Dr. Ronald DePinho. He's a cancer researcher at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, led a study, you may have seen the headlines just this last week, in which researchers succeeded in making mice age rapidly and then reversing the aging process, just published in the journal Nature. He's also a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. You can see before and after photos of the mice at our website, onpointradio.org. All kinds of questions here. I've got one. Mark, this is from Lauren. She says, I'm 31 years old. I take step aerobics and spin and sculpt classes. I already am experiencing fatigue in my joints. She says, I fear that by the time I'm 91, I may need knee or hip replacements. I mean, Olga hasn't had that, but can everybody really look to this super vigorous exercise as their path to healthy aging, Dr. Tarnopolsky?
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And there are a lot of individuals who feel that if you are doing sports throughout your life, that you will, quote unquote, wear out the joints, and that our joints haven't kept up with this increase in our age of average death now. However, if you look at the data, there are studies even with runners, and there was a nice study that came out of Stanford 2 years ago that showed that as long as you didn't have pre-existing damage to your knees, such as previous surgery or, you know, a major accident in football, for example, when you were a teenager, that throughout a lifetime there was no greater risk of osteoarthritis in the knees in the runners versus the control individuals. So I think the main thing is that if you have had damage to your knee, you have to avoid certain activities. But life is a smorgasbord, and sports are the same way. There are about 1,000 different types of sporting activities. And for example, one of Canada's top marathon runners, Mike Dion, was an amazing runner, but he had an injury and damaged his knee. He switched to cross-country skiing, and he'll be competing here at Silver Star Mountain, which is why we're up here training, mm-hmm. in the World Masters Championships. And he's finished in the top 10 in cross-country skiing, and he's in his mid-50s now. So I think we can switch up the sports and try different things if we do have damage to a specific joint. But by no means, I think, should that be a reason for people not to exercise, because the long-term data just doesn't support that damage hypothesis.
If it's a combination of exercise and genetics, chromosomes, Dr. DePinho, can you foresee a time when people who may not be in such great shape, and that may be standing between them and an exercise regimen, could have some kind of chromosome therapy that would boost their vigor enough that they could be out on the track, or at least at the gym, something?
Yeah, one could imagine various strategies that might, for example, uncork this gene that is normally expressed at very low levels, and that might enable some of that damage to be repaired in a way that then improves mitochondria, diminishes free radicals, and then sets us on a more positive path. That's a tall order. It's going to take years, if not decades, of research to get to that point. But these mouse studies, these genetic studies, mm-hmm. have illuminated a potential path in that direction.
I mean, how far are we? Because people listening right now, they may wonder, you know, 10 years from now, 15, are they going to be able to have a little, telomerase enzyme, I don't know, injection, or flip a couple of chromosome switches and be back in business, be feeling, you know, super again? Do you imagine therapies like that?
Very, very difficult to really put a timeline on this. You know, science is given us more surprises than fulfilled prophecy, so I won't go on record as giving any particular timeline. But, there is an intense amount of research in this area. There are many different factors that are responsible for aging, and we're finding additional ways to manipulate that process. So the years ahead will impact on those processes. The extent to which that will happen, when that will happen, no one knows at this point.
What about risks? We've got a listener, John O'Leary, says, there's risk of developing, he says, please speak to the risks of the kind of research. He says, you're doing it in mice, but we're not mice. Are there risks of side effects of this kind of intervention?
Well, that's a very important question. So the Nobel Prize was given out for telomerase. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we learned in the study of telomerase is that it's active in cancer cells because cancer cells want to be immortal.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in fact, there are therapies to quell the activity of telomerase in cancer cells mm-hmm. to try to impact on
slow them down.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And so one could imagine that if somebody had an occult malignancy in their advanced years.
Occult means?
A cancer that's just starting out,
okay.
that has not yet been detected,
mm-hmm.
That flipping on the telomerase switch that cancer might enable it to progress more rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand,
mm-hmm.
and this is where it gets complicated.
Mm-hmm.
These erosion of telomeres, the damage of telomeres, is a major mechanism that causes cancer in the first place. So if you were to turn on this gene in advance, you may actually diminish the incidence of cancer as a function of advancing age. So this is where the research comes in. You got to know where and when to act. You've got to know how to implement any particular therapeutic intervention.
We're in a very sensitive terrain here. Let's go to our listeners, Nashville, Tennessee. Carl, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. This is a great show. And I tell you, let me describe myself. I'm 6 feet tall, 40 years old, 203 pounds, and I scored 6 touchdowns, not to toot my own horn, in our annual Thanksgiving football game.
Heck of a man, Carl. We've got the picture.
What a guy.
A guy half my age. I'm running past him.
All right.
The reason why I've been like this, and I've been the same weight, same size for about 21, 22 years,
mm-hmm.
is because of my lifestyle. I eat well. I eat vegetables. I drink a lot of water.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need a pill. Maybe every 2 or 3 years, I may be sick enough to have any kind of antibiotics, and that may be once a year
mm-hmm.
during that period.
Mm-hmm.
And full disclosure, I must admit this, I do have genetics on my side. I've met 3 of my great-grandparents. My last great-grandparent died, Poppy Hill died when I was 26 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I do have that going for me as well. And I believe that if you exercise, if you live a healthy lifestyle, then you don't need a geneticist or pills for you to have a comfortable life in later stages of life.
Carl, I'm still thinking about those 6 Thanksgiving Day touchdowns. Congratulations on that in the family football game. But let me ask you a question. Are you looking for super long life, or do you mainly want to be vigorous while you're alive, Carl? Carl may be gone. I think Carl's out on the football field already. Oh, that's great. Let me get one more. Carl, good luck to you. Aaron, Lunenburg, Massachusetts. Aaron, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I agree with the previous caller. I just want to live the fullness of the years that I have. I'm 36 years old. I have 3 children. I'm not as svelte as perhaps I was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But I love aging. There is a beauty and a wisdom in aging, and it drives me nuts. My husband and I are so sick of watching movies and TV and watching all these baby boomer stars that we grew up watching, and they look like, I don't know what they...
You mean all the surgery and all the who knows what going on there, all the fakery of trying to...
Right, mm-hmm. And I said, where is the beauty? Where is the responsibility for your lifestyle? Again, you know, we're a society that says, give me a pill and make it better. You know, stop smoking, start exercising, start eating well. These are things that will help you age less quickly. And I just feel like this is an easy fix. I love the beauty of wisdom. I love the beauty of aging, and I want to see that continue.
Yeah, Aaron, I love that perspective. Let me hold it right there. At the same time, we know we've got a huge wave of people heading toward higher ages, and if we don't have them in pretty good health, that's going to be some burden in this country. One more call right here. Leominster, Massachusetts. Joseph, you're on the air, Joseph.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I find it a fascinating subject. And my question when I first started listening is, what is the intention aging or wanting to slow the aging process. I had the great fortune to live in an Asian culture for many years, and I believe, and with the indigenous people, and I bet if we take any indigenous people throughout the world, that their acceptance of nature, of which we're a part, of birth, aging, certain illnesses, and ultimately death. And so I hear a lot of anti-aging, but what about the problem of death? And what is the intention? Are we wanting to prolong and have a quality of life? Or is ultimately deeper down, if we question, are we actually trying to say, well, do we have some immortality that we can actually create and maybe ultimately not die? And what implications does that have? Because everywhere we look around us, we see the change process here in the Northeast right now. The leaves have changed. That's a natural process. So I'd like to hear your guests comment on the intentionality of this. And I've only heard the word death once on the call.
Joseph, it's a terrific perspective, and I'm really grateful for it. Mark Tarnopolsky, let me come to you first. When you do your work, which is intended to let people, I guess, age with more vigor, what is your intention? Are you looking for longevity, for eternal life? For, is this a denial of death? Is it? What's your intention here, Mark?
No, I think every organism, as the listener pointed out, does have a finite life, and there is eventually death. But what we're more interested in, excuse me, is, if you will, compression of aging. And that is, if someone is 65 and they have arthritis and they can't get up out of a chair or get off the toilet and need institutionalization, and if you will, for lack of a better term, wither for the next 15 years, is that the optimal quality of life versus living independently, being able to pick up your grandchildren? So what we're looking at is to improve the functionality, and to some extent people call this a compression of aging. So that instead of slow decline in your physical capacity to death, whatever that point is, 80 or 90, we're trying to keep people healthy for a longer period of time. And inevitably, people are going to die. But if they have a healthy lifestyle to a age of 80 or 90, we feel that's probably better for society from an economic perspective, and better for an overall health and vigor for these individuals.
Dr. DePino, Aaron says, I love aging. But maybe what you're talking about here, compressing the sort of decrepitude.
That's right.
Is changing our notion of it. Yes, you'll age. Yes, to Joseph's question, we will still be approaching death, I guess, but perhaps we don't have to do it with so much pain and incapacity.
Lots of points here. I mean, first of all, we want to diminish the amount of age-related disorders, right? And so the critical point here is to increase years of healthy living. The question of lifespan, longevity, is another question. Our species appears to have a maximal lifespan of 120. It's not clear. We do not know if that can be extended. As I mentioned earlier, there are many factors that collaborate, that conspire to impact on cellular health. And so in this particular study, we manipulated just one of those factors and had a dramatic reversal. But the animal still, after this transient manipulation, ended up living to the appropriate length of life that they should have lived to.
Mm-hmm.
And so the point of whether or not one could manipulate lifespan is a separate point that's going to require a tremendous amount of knowledge about the many factors that come together to impact on our health.
It's very arresting research you're doing. Here's a web comment that says, the wealthiest people in the world will have eternal life. And with their newfound immortality, a new world order will become a reality. Our listener says, many science fiction books have been written about this conundrum. None of them predicted a glorious utopia, quite the opposite. What do you say?
Well, I think that one of the we are on a collision course for a burden, a societal and economic burden, with the changing demographics.
People who are not immortal but may be ill for a long time.
That's right. I mean, if you, again, think about the changing demographics and the increased number of people over the age of 60 in this coming century, it's estimated that by the year 2025, we're going to have 1.2 billion individuals over the age of 60, almost the size of the nation of China today. And so we really need to intensify efforts to understand the aging process, understand age-related disorders, so we can be very proactive in managing those processes and make them accessible to all of humanity in very much the same way that we've done over the past 100 years, which is responsible for increasing the lifespan across many populations.
Dr. Tarnopolsky, when you look at Canadians, when you look at Americans, do you see a society that's optimizing health in higher ages at this point? Or, you know, how close or far are we from what might be the best we could do?
Well, I think we know currently what the strategy is in older adults to improve mitochondrial function, to decrease inflammation, to decrease oxidative stress. And interestingly, there's even data that physical activity will also improve telomerase activity in the white blood cells, which gets back to a point that one of the earlier callers brought up, that he has fewer infections.
In other words, you wouldn't need a pill. The exercise itself may be interacting with your chromosome health.
Oh, there's no question that it interacts with the mitochondria, the nuclear DNA, and your chromosomes in a favorable way. So we have the answer currently. The difficulty is translating that into something that the average person will do. And that gets back to something that Olga brought up, which is motivation. And I think the problem is in society is that even our physical educational programs, which set the tenor, if you will, for lifelong physical activity, have been cut dramatically in Canada.
In the United States, too, very widely.
I understand, in the United States as well. Mm-hmm. The other issue, too, and I notice this when I go traveling to various cities, they're not set up for people to bike or to walk. Some places, only the hotel will have a sidewalk, and then it ends. So how do you go for a walk or a run? And I think society needs to be cognizant of making the opportunities available for older adults to participate in physical activity in a safe way. And that's not an expensive thing. For example, if we look at Olga, who was raised on a farm and went gardening and going for walks, that's not expense. That is a therapy that was imposed for minimal expense and is available to pretty much everyone throughout the world.
So get out there and move, and maybe there your best chance of a long and healthy life. Our great thanks today to Olga Kotelko for being with us. That was so terrific. Mark Tarnopolsky in British Columbia, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Dr. Ronald DePino, wonderful to have you. Congratulations on your research.
Listen to your mom. Exercise.
Do it. This is On Point.